Okay, good evening, everyone. So last week we were supposed to speak about the topic of women reading Megillah, and it didn't work out last week, so now here we are this week, and maybe we still have a few minutes left of Shushan Purim, so it's okay to still read, to still talk about this, and God willing, it'll inform us for next year as well. So the big question that we're going to discuss this evening is it permissible for a woman to read Megillah ever? That's question number one. Question number two is, if a woman is reading Megillah, is she allowed to fulfill the obligation of reading for only other women? Can it be for men as well? And then the last question is really, why would Megillah be any different than anything else, right? Because, of course, we know that as a general rule in Orthodox Judaism, we don't have women getting up to lead regular services. We don't have women getting up to read from the Torah. So why should a Megillah be any different? So let's jump right in to source number one. And we're going to begin by trying to understand the basics over here. Number one, we're going to understand where the obligation to read Megillah comes from in the first place, and then we'll build on it from there, and God willing, try to have a better understanding for the obligation for everyone and the obligation for who is required or allowed to do the reading. So if you take a look at source number one is from Megillah Esther. She'll look familiar. If not, then we have to reread the Megillah again this year. So towards the end of the Megillah, we're told that, and these days are remembered and done in every generation, every family, every state, and every city, and these days of Purim will not pass from among the Jews, and their memory will not be ended from their progeny, right? So this is where the Megillah tells us that there is this going to be this reality that we have to try to remember the story of Megillah Esther every single generation, and the Gemara in Megillah, in source number two, tells us, well, this is how we know that there's an obligation to read the Megillah every year. Rava said, it is derived from remembering. Remembering. Here it is written, and these days are remembered. And there it is written in the book of Shemot, write this as a remembrance in the book. Just as there it is in a book, so too here it is in a book. And when do we know that, and whence do we know that this remembering is reading aloud, right? That's how you fulfill the obligation of remembering, because one could say maybe we just have the obligation to just sit down and think for a few moments, remember the story, and that's it. How do we know it has to be said out loud? Perhaps it's simply looking it over. It wouldn't arise in your thoughts, for it is taught to remember. Could that be by heart? When it says, don't forget, behold, forgetting of the heart is already spoken for. Thus, what do I establish from remember? It must mean verbally. So fine, so the Gemara and Megillah makes it very clear that there is an obligation to read the Megillah every single year, and that there is this obligation to, that when you do that, that is how you fulfill the notion of remembering the story of the Megillah. Now, the Gemara in Megillah says further in source number three, it's a continuation from source number two, that mitzvahs kriya, that there is a mitzvah obligation to read the Megillah, and what is it about? Upersumi nisa. It's all about publicizing the miracle, right? So there are several holidays and several mitzvot throughout the holidays of the year that have a sort of a subset of an obligation to it. Excuse me, that it's not just the obligation to do the mitzvah, right? Sometimes you just have to check off a box. You did the mitzvah. But sometimes there is a deeper level to it, sort of a almost like a glorification of the mitzvah, in that what we call is, that's what we call persuminitza, that there's this obligation to publicize the miracle. Sometimes we have to go above and beyond to publicize a miracle. Now, what would be one important thing that we do? Let's go to the holiday of Hanukkah, for example. So what do we do when it comes to lighting the menorah to help us publicize the miracle?
Put it in our windows.
Oh, good. We put it by the windows. And specifically, when do we try to light the menorah? The nighttime, but when in...
When it's dark.
Right. Good, Barbara. When it's dark, so people could see it. And specifically, when people are still in the street, we want to do it earlier enough in the evening so that as many people as possible could see it. So we know that when it comes to publicizing the miracle, what that by definition means is that we need people to be able to be there for it, which will bring us to a concept later on, which is an idea known as Berov Am Hadras HaMelech, that the more people you have, the greater the glorification of the king is. And therefore, there is this great... question, as that is to say, if you have this ability to have two concurrent minyanim, if you want to have a minyan A at 8 o'clock and you want to have minyan B at 8 o'clock, and there are different types, right? Maybe one is, I gotta turn that off. maybe one is a men's reading, maybe one is a women's reading. Is that appropriate to do? Even if you check off all the halachic questions, well, you're not really publicizing the miracle properly, because you should all be doing it together as one and not in separate groups. So that's going to be another consideration a little bit later on. Okay, so let's take a look at a few more sources before we begin to really get into the meat and potatoes of the topic. The Rambam, in his Hilchos Megillah, in source number 4, says that both the reader and the one who hears from the reader discharge their obligation, and that is when he hears from someone who is obligated in reading the Megillah. In other words, there is this interesting concept. Jews always figured out interesting ways of doing things, and so there is an obligation for every single person to read the Megillah. Who here read the Megillah this year? Thank you. Yosef. Right, Yosef is the one who did it out loud, but did anyone else read the Megillah?
Yeah, myself.
Okay, fine, Barbara. All right, good. So some of us maybe read the Megillah. All right. But the point is that those of us who went to a reading of the Megillah, we didn't actually read it ourselves, even if we followed word for word, or every other word for word, to the best of our ability. At the end of the day, we didn't read it, and the person who was reading in the center of the shul, they're the ones who read it. But in Judaism, we have an idea of shomea ka'ona, that when I hear something, it's as if I am saying it myself, as if I am doing it. So, if someone is reading the Megillah, and I too have an obligation to read the Megillah, by listening to them, that's as if I too am reading the Megillah. The caveat is, and this is relevant for many different mitzvot that we have, that the person who is reading the Megillah has to have the same level obligation of all of those who are in the room. So if someone is obligated to only hear the Megillah and they read the Megillah for other people, that's not good, because there could be others in the room who have an obligation to read it, and reading it would be a step above. So people understand, people following? Yes, so it's a little, lots of small details, but at the end of the day, we all fulfill our obligation of reading the Megillah by listening to someone who has that same level obligation read it, and therefore it's as if as we read it ourselves. That's what the Rambam is essentially saying over here. And if you take a look at source number 5, so in the matter if it is permissible from the outset to divide Megillah reading among a number of readers, right? So typically, in most minyanim, what we do nowadays is we usually just have one guy reading it for the entire shul, and it's just one person. But is one allowed to go ahead and divide up the chapters, right? On the one hand, you'd say maybe there should be no issue, right? Many shuls on a Shabbos morning, when they have the laning from the Torah, they have different people read different aliyahs, so why should the Megillah be any different? On the other hand, maybe you'll say no, that when it comes to the reading of the Megillah, it has to be sort of one entity, and so to have multiple readers would not be appropriate. But over here we see very clearly that it is permissible from the outset to divide the Megillah reading among a number of readers. And Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, one of the contemporary Sephardi Rabbanim of our times, told me that the matter is permissible if all of the readers heard the first brachot and all of the reading from its beginning, right? So you can't have some guy just like hop around the shuls and just hop in for chapter 3 and not hear the bracha ever. That's not okay. If they are there the whole time, they heard the bracha, then it's okay to have the guy go ahead and do the reading. Right, and he does not have to go back to the beginning, but just from the place where the previous reader stopped. Okay, so far we understand there is an obligation to read the Megillah. That's how we fulfill the notion of remembering the story of Purim. We know that there is an obligation to specifically go ahead and read it, but we don't have to read it as long as we listen to it by someone who is obligated in reading it. And we see that you can go ahead and have multiple readers when it comes to the Megillah. Finally, this notion of reading it in the night and the day, right? So where does that come from? So there's a Gemara in Megillah that tells us that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, a person must read the Megillah at night and repeat it during the day, for it says, my God, I call by day and you don't respond, and night there is no silence for me. So Rabbi Chalbo said, Ula Bira'a said, a person must read the Megillah at night and repeat it in the day because of another verse in Tehillim. The point is that we want to go ahead and make sure we truly fulfill this idea of remembering and repeating this story. So we do it at night and that day. Is the obligation of night and day the exact same level obligation?
guessing that.
Okay, well, why do you say that?
Because at the end of the Megillah reading, there's something that you say only at night. You don't say it in,
isn't that weird?
In the morning reading.
It's kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
It's not even a bracha. It's just like a paragraph.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right. So David says correctly that there is something we say at night that we don't say during the day after the Megillah reading. So perhaps that's indicative of different levels of obligations. Okay, could be. So the truth is, we'll have to see, right? It's from this Gemara alone, it would seem that it is basically the same, that you have this obligation to read it in the night and the day, because perhaps maybe you missed something at night that you should not have missed at night in terms of your full capability of remembering the story. And so you go ahead and do it twice to make sure you did it extra correctly. And so ultimately, right now, we would assume that it is the same, but we will ultimately end up saying that perhaps there is a difference, of course, between the evening and the morning as well. Okay. Yeah? Good? Good. Okay. So with all of that in mind, let's now try to understand the level of obligation that men have versus women. In other words, we know very often that there is typically a different level obligation for men and women for many mitzvot, right? That's not new to us. We're all well aware of that. And at the end of the day, when it comes to Megillah, how do we view it? Do women and men have the same or different obligations? So just from what we've seen so far, what would you say?
I would say they all have the same.
Why do you say that?
They're all supposed to hear it. And if you're going to hear it, that's reading it.
Okay, good. Barbara, what were you going to say?
It didn't.
Oh, okay. Right. So Jim says correctly, from what we've seen so far, there is this obligation of remembering. No one said anything about men or women. So therefore, we should assume that both men and women are required. Anyone want to disagree with Jim? Okay, so I would disagree with Jim. Sorry, Jim. The reason why is very simple, because we know that women generally are exempt from time-bound mitzvot. This is the epitome of a time-bound mitzvah. And so therefore, right, it's you're only obligated to do it one day during the year. And so why should women be obligated the same way as men? If anything, they should be totally exempt from the mitzvah. Jim, I'll give you a chance to make a rebuttal.
Everybody is doing it?
No.
Once in the morning, once at night, once at night.
Oh, but it's the same halachic day. Oh, okay, we haven't gotten there yet. So.
Everybody,
cheating already.
Everybody was supposed to be around the base of Mount Sinai and to hear the Torah, so I would assume that the Megillah would...
Do the people at Mount Sinai hear the Megillah?
Pardon?
Do the people at Mount Sinai hear the Megillah?
I'm just saying that the Megillah, it has the same, if it's going to have the same course as a mitzvah, to hear and be part of, that it should be the same sort of Torah.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Isn't it more the time-bound mitzvah are usually things that you have to do by a certain hour? Megillah reading, you have to do it at night, you have to do it during the day, but it's not, you must do it at 5 o'clock p.m.
I don't know, what about the mitzvah of sukkah? Many women are happy to not be obligated in sukkah, and there's no specific time. You're obligated for all 7 days.
Yeah, well, I grew up in a family that has obligated for all 7 days. So I don't
worry
about that one.
Okay, right. So this is the tension that we're going to have to struggle with. But the truth is that the rabbis are very clear that women are absolutely obligated in hearing the story of the Megillah. What we'll see is this question of just how obligated are they, right? So hearing, absolutely, but reading, maybe not. So take a look at source number 7. It's the Gemara in Eirichin. Our rabbis outline this very clearly. It says, all are obligated in Megillah reading. All are fit to read the Megillah, right? That's the end of the class right there. It's very obvious. Clearly, it's not the end. To include what? To include women. As Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said, for Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says, women are obligated in Megillah reading because they indeed were included in that miracle. She'af hein hayu b'oto hanis. Right? So there is this concept that we have a few times throughout the year, and that is that we say that women were equally involved in the miracle of the story, right? Were women any less likely to be killed as Jews in the story of Purim than men?
No.
Absolutely not. They were just as Jewish as the men, if not maybe more Jewish than the men, right? And they were going to die too. And so since they too were part of the miracle, even though it's true that they are exempt from time-bound mitzvot, we still obligate them regardless of that because they had just as much of an enjoyment and appreciation and an excitement over the fact that they were not killed as the men. And so therefore, they had too have to remember this incredible miracle. Now, the question...
But how about if you compare the miracle at Purim to the miracle at Sinai when God pronounced the first of the commandments?
And okay, so let's compare it.
They were there then, so why didn't they become obligated for those things also?
Well, they were there then, that's true, but Sinai wasn't a salvation. It was just they happened to be there too. And again, the idea that women are exempt from the mitzvot is, God forbid, not a punishment. It's more of a practical reality that the rabbis accepted this as the fact. And so we accept the general rule that they are certainly obligated to keep the Torah, but that they are exempt from several mitzvot that are time-bound. And so we seek to understand when and why there might be certain circumstances that they would still be obligated even if it was time-bound. But I hear the point, but okay. Yeah. Okay, so with that, we have to now understand, again, the level of obligation that women do have when it comes to reading the Megillah. So if you take a look at source number 8, one of the great Rishonim, the Baal Hilchot Gedolot, he says as follows. So all are obligated in the reading the Megillah. Women and bondsmen and minors are exempt from reading the Megillah, but they are obligated in hearing. Why? For all were at risk of being destroyed and killed and made to perish, and since all were at risk, all are obligated to hear Megillah. And Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi would gather all members of his household and read Megillah to Esther before them, right? So all of a sudden, the Bahag comes around, that's the source that we just read, and he says something absolutely revolutionary, seems to not be based on anything that we've seen thus far. He says that it's true, women are obligated, but, by the way, only in hearing. Where does he get that from? That's absolutely true.
To me, that would indicate an obligation to read, to take action, like you said in your drush on Shabbos. All of a sudden, she turned around and became proactive. So why not women?
Well, again, so he's not saying that women are not obligated. He's just saying women are obligated in hearing. Sorry? But again, it is an obligation. It's just a different level obligation. What?
Maybe back then women couldn't read.
Oh, okay, maybe. Well, I'm sure there were men that couldn't read also, but okay, could be. Yeah.
Well, also, the women are thrown in with the bondsmen and such, people who aren't really free to control their time. So while they are performing their labors, you could read to them.
Okay, so
they don't have to stop their labor.
Okay, good. So Gail makes a great point. Perhaps it's, again, more a matter of practicality. Again, women are not exempt from time-bound mitzvot, although some might be a little bit cynical and disagree with this at times. It's not a matter of chauvinism. It's not a matter of punishment. It's a matter of practicality. Since women typically had different types of obligations than men and vice versa, so when a woman would go ahead and have lots of obligations, when the rabbis would then say, oh, women are actually obligated in this and this, even though it is a time-bound mitzvah, well, so you're just going to make their lives harder by doing that. And so therefore, perhaps if we obligate them only in hearing and not reading, what we do is we allow them to be somewhat freed up and they could listen with one ear and something like that. Okay, could be. Okay, so it's totally... Why are you smiling at me?
I think being able to hear and read the story as an absolute obligation is empowering for women.
It may be empowering, but they may, you can't predict what the children's needs are.
Isn't that what spouses are for?
I think there's a leniency.
Thank you.
I mean, I think it's a generosity, it's a leniency.
Okay.
Not anything.
Okay, good. All right, so.
But Purim is not a hog in the sense that we refrain from all work.
Okay, right.
So therefore, men who have a job would have the same level of obligation as a woman who might have children to take care of.
Absolutely, right. Each of them should have their own timing difficulties with hearing the Megillah. Okay, good. So in terms of where the Bahag gets this from, that was a really weird handshake. In terms of where he gets this from, it's not entirely clear. The Bahag was one of the great early Rishonim, and he is fully and unequivocally respected by everyone. However, he does make several comments throughout his commentary that is sometimes not always clear where he gets it from, and this is one of those examples, to my understanding, because at the end of the day, The notion that you should separate the hearing and the reading seems to be totally unprecedented, at least up until this point. And so fine, but that is his opinion. If you take a look, however, there are others who say very clearly that no, women have an equal obligation to read, just like men. Look at Tosfos and Source number 9, to include women, for they are obligated in reading the Megillah and fit to read the Megillah, which was the language of Rashi, but Bahag did not rule thus. Therefore, one must explain here that women reading only discharge the obligation of women, but not men. Okay, so jumping ahead just for a moment. If women are to read, going back to what we said previously, there's this notion of the person who is doing the reading for everyone has to have the same level, if not a greater level of obligation than all of those who are around them. So, if women only have the obligation to hear, but not to read, so what would that mean, essentially? That a lower obligation, and therefore, could a woman read Megillah? Okay, good. So theoretically, it shouldn't be an issue for women to read, but they can't read for men because they have a lower level obligation, and therefore they cannot fulfill the obligation for men in the same way. Sorry?
If we believe that.
If we believe that. We haven't even gotten halfway through the sources, David. Okay, so if you take a look at source number 10, a Grid Soloveitchik in his Rishimot Shiurim, he says as follows, that to understand this idea that women might have a lower level obligation in reading, to say that it was just made up is quite difficult. And so therefore, we have to realize that the truth is that every time we say that there is an obligation to read the Megillah, there really are two separate mitzvot involved. Take a look. For in reading Megillah, there are two mitzvah fulfillments. One is Talmud Torah, of reading sacred texts, right? So just the idea of learning Torah, that's part A of the obligation. Part B is publicizing the miracle. In other words, reading through the story and getting an understanding of what happened. Men, he says, are obligated in both fulfillments. Women are obligated only for the reason of fulfilling the mitzvah of publicizing the miracle, right? So as a general rule, only men are obligated in learning all of the Torah. Women are obligated in learning parts of the Torah that are relevant for the daily life, so things like halacha and the like, right? So this is related to the question of women learning Gemara, which we're not getting into right now, right? So women typically, the first area of Torah they should learn is all of that which is relevant for their daily life. But when it comes to every other area of Torah, there's not a black and white obligation. And so therefore, very clearly, when it comes to reading of the Megillah, story is important, we should know our history, blah, blah, blah. But to say that women are obligated from the Talmud Torah, from the learning Torah aspect of reading Megillah, is not so strong. It's pretty unlikely that that would be the case. And therefore, it's only the second part of just publicizing the miracle. Publicizing the miracle really just means, okay, you hear it, but to read it, it's hard to say that. And so therefore, that's what Rav Soloveitchik is bringing out over here in this point. Now, with this said, there is this question of if men have the obligation to read, and obviously hear as well, and women only have the obligation to hear and not to read, so what is the bracha that we typically make when it comes to reading the Megillah? We make three brachot. But what's the specific one on reading the Megillah? Right, likro, right? To read. But if a woman only has an obligation to hear the Megillah and she is reading it herself or for other women, what might the bracha be? Lishmoa, to hear, right? So that's actually exactly what the Ramah says in source number 11. He says, and there are those who say that if a woman reads for herself, she recites the bracha Lishmoa Megillah, to hear the Megillah, for she is not obligated in reading. Okay, so that really sets us off now into this larger question of how the brachot are meant to work exactly. So let's take for granted a few things for where we are at right now. We clearly understand that both men and women are obligated in being a part and fulfilling the mitzvah of reading the Megillah. Men are obviously obligated in reading and hearing. Some say that women are too as well. Others make the argument that no, they're just obligated in hearing. Everyone agrees, though, that they, of course, have to be involved in hearing the Megillah twice on Purim, just like men do as well. So with this being the case, so how do the brachot work? And so in particular, the question that always comes up every single year, it happened just yesterday, right? So we had a second reading later in the day, right before the Seuda that we had here. The reading was approximately 4:30 or 4:40 or so. And if there are only women in the room, so, and Yosef is going to make the bracha before reading the Megillah, so what bracha should he make? Because he, again, remember, he fulfilled his obligation in the morning. And so now he's only reading again for, let's say, there were men in the room as well. But let's say there were only women in the room. So would he make the bracha l'kro, or do you make the bracha l'shmoa? What would you say? Serena says l'shmoa, to hear. Anyone disagree? Okay, all right. So this is really the gray area in halacha. Some poskim will say that when it comes down to it, since the man is doing the reading and he ultimately does have this obligation to read, then he should make the brachas like he does normally. However, others will say, just like Serena, that no, since he already fulfilled this obligation and now he's making the bracha for the people who need to hear it, and they only have a hearing obligation, so he should go ahead and make the Lishmoa bracha as well. So let's take a look at some of the sources over here.
The minion doesn't figure into...
Oh, minion. We haven't got to minion yet.
Oh, okay.
Okay, we'll get
I'll
to minion.
I'll come back later.
Yeah. You'll see, as cynical as some people are already feeling, there's some sources that are going to feel very progressive in a second. All right, so take a look at source number 12. So the Pri Chadash, he writes, that which the Rama wrote, there are those who say if a woman reads for herself, she recites the bracha Lishmoa Megillah. These are not essential matters to rely on them, but rather women recite the bracha al mikra megillah like the men. And this is simple, right? So stop making things so crazy. You're going to start making separate brachot for people. You're going to lose your mind. So just go ahead and everyone should follow al mikra megillah. And that is that is all you should go ahead and use. If you take a look at source number 13 in Shuvot v'Hanhagot, Rav Sternbach, he writes as follows. The fundamental practical halacha is for him to recite the bracha al mikra megillah, even though he reads only for women. Firstly, because according to the majority of halachic authorities, women are like men and are obligated in reading. And according to their approach, when she recites a bracha on hearing, a bracha on the reading in which she is obligated is lacking, which is not the case when they recite al mikra megillah. Meaning, in other words, could be technically true that the more appropriate bracha to be made for women would be lishmoa, but there are so many considerations and concerns that go into that because there are other elements as well to the mitzvah, and to just say that it's only hearing and not reading, well, it's not entirely clear to make such a black and white line. And so if you say al mikra megillah, on reading the megillah, you'll cover all your bases and be much more prepared in a sense. According to all opinions, she discharges her obligation. For in synagogue, she discharges her obligation even though she hears the bracha al mikra megillah. Furthermore, even if women are exempt from reading, the reason is because it is a positive time bound mitzvah. And for the reason of being included in the miracle, we obligate only hearing. But when she fulfills the mitzvah through reading, it is not worse than any positive time-bound mitzvah, for which women are exempt and are still also able to recite the bracha when they fulfill the mitzvah, right? Very famously, if a woman wants to go ahead and do a time-bound commandment, she's allowed to make, for Ashkenazim, she makes the bracha. And so she's going to go shake the lulav on Sukkot. She says, Al Natilas Lulav. So over here, when it comes to reading the Megillah, even if she's just listening, well, she's not going to lose anything by saying Al-Mikra Megillah. So it would seem, therefore, that that is the appropriate bracha to go ahead and make. And so ultimately, when a man reads for her, he recites the bracha Al-Mikra Megillah, and she discharges her obligation. Okay, so it would seem that very simply that is the bracha that one would make. You should say Al-Mikra, at least if there is a man reading for women. Okay, now to Maurice's question. What about a minyan? Is a minyan necessary for Megillah? What do you say?
No.
Oh, okay. Gail says no, there is no minyan necessary for Megillah. Anyone agree or disagree?
Oh, I don't
know. You what?
You could certainly read it yourself.
If someone's ill, if someone comes to their home to read Megillah, there's no...
Oh, good. Okay, good. So the pandemic taught us this, right? So, right, I remember at the very beginning of COVID when... So the first year, I don't know what you guys did here. I assume you did a regular Purim. We did a regular Purim on Long Island that first year, and it was just like New Rochelle. What? Yeah, right. That was the super spreader Purim. But in New Rochelle, because they had patient zero over there, so they had like lots of Chabad people going to like every single home reading Megillah. So one person, right? So technically, you don't need a Megillah, a minion for the reading of Megillah. Is a minion better?
Definitely.
Oh, okay.
It's always better.
It's always better. Okay. What does a minion mean for Megillah?
Oh,
okay, good. So can you have a minion of women for Megillah, and is that of any value? What?
Why not?
Why yes.
Why should it be supposed to be publicized?
Oh, okay, good. Okay, so now see, we're getting very progressive now. So we take a look at source number 14. So the Gemara in Megillah tells us that Megillah should be read in its time, and we read it even as an individual. Now, take a look at the Aruch HaShulchan, source number 15. Halacha was decided like Rav, the Megillah reading in its time, we read it even as an individual. From Rif and the Rambam and the Rush and the Ramban, it becomes clear that certainly for glorifying the mitzvah and publicizing the miracle, Rav also concedes that 10 is preferable, right? So again, so there are these two concerns. One is the black and white obligation. Black and white obligation for minyan, yes or no? No. Sorry, Sarah, you'll catch up. Right, so is there a base obligation for minyan? Absolutely not. But is it a good idea to have minyan? It's a great idea to have minyan because we like to glorify the mitzvah publicly with as many people as possible. So in terms of that, we define a quorum as being something public as opposed to less than a quorum. And so therefore, going ahead and having 10 is a good thing. And thus it is the custom, and the bigger the congregation, the more glorification for Berov Am Hadras Melech, and the multitude of people is the glory of the king. But if in the synagogue it is impossible to hear well because of the tumult of banging for Haman and the like, it is better to read it in a group of 10 at home. Right? So if you have this question of, right, so that's why we have our very effective traffic light here. Actually, a great story. Today, I was being interviewed for something, the people wanted to know if they could take my picture. So I said, okay, we'll take a picture in the sanctuary. We go to the sanctuary, and they see the traffic light. And they said, Rabbi, we don't know much about Judaism, but is this a normal thing? And I had to explain Haman and whatever, it was a whole thing. But the point is, though, that sometimes you run into this issue when you have so much banging and so much clapping for Haman, so you really can't hear. And this is a really big concern. So if it's between hearing really well at home with 10 or maybe even less than that, perhaps, versus being in public with a major congregation and not hearing super well, well, it's pretty clear that you probably should be at home or in a smaller group. Again, 10 is usually the best to do that, but to be home in private is much better so that you can actually hear every single word. Now, in terms of the makeup of the minyan, so that's a big question. And the Ritva is very progressive over here. The Ritva, one of the major Rishonim, he says, since we follow the halachic position of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, that women are obligated in Megillah, it follows that women combine for a quorum. Right? So don't ever let anyone tell you that women can't make a minyan. Women can make a minyan. And the fact that they don't combine for zimun, right? So typically at the end of a meal, right? So you say with 3 men or more or 10 men or more, you say Rabbi Sain of Areich, you invite everyone to bench with you. So we don't typically combine men and women for that, although some say you do, but we don't. That case is different because there is a major combining, for there is a change in Birkat HaMazon on their account to add Birkat HaZimun on their account, and one should be concerned for immodesty. But here, there is no difference in Megillah reading or in its brachot, whether recited individually or with 10, and it is not considered to be such a combination that we should be concerned for immodesty. So, do we allow women to be part of the minyan of Megillah? According to the Ritva, absolutely. And so to what extent do we say that would be true? If you're in shul and you have a small community or whatever, you want to have a separate reading, whatever it might be, and you have 5 men, 5 women, is that a minyan? No. For these purposes? Yes. Absolutely. What if you have 10 women and no men?
Sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. For these purposes, no problem whatsoever. Of course, not everyone agrees with that. In case you didn't see that one coming. If you take a look at the Sefer HaItter, he says in source number 17, women are obligated in Megillah reading, for they indeed were included in the same miracle. And it makes sense that just as women recite Zeman for themselves and don't combine with men to make a quorum for Birkat HaMazon, here too, they don't combine L'chachila. Right? So what that means is that in an ideal world, if you're setting up the perfect situation to be the most ideal form of reading of the Megillah, you should have 10 men in the room to create a minyan for reading the Megillah. Now, looking ahead, this creates a major issue for women reading the Megillah, right? Because if you're going to have a separate women's reading, and ideally you should have a group of 10 men as well, so that's a little complex in terms of how one tries to do that. Doesn't necessarily mean that you cannot do it, but that is one concern that we will have to be aware of. So with this, let's see a few more sources to move forward. So source number 18, the Shulchan Aruch, Megillah on the 14th and 15th of Adar, one must strive for 10. And if it is impossible to find 10, we read them as individuals. The Ramah adds, and it is doubtful whether women combine with men for the 10. Right? So let's understand how important that statement is. By the Ramah saying that it's doubtful for women to be part of the minyan, so this is all a rabbinic mitzvah. Right? So whenever there's a rabbinic mitzvah, we typically are more lenient in general. And so therefore, one could make the argument based on this Ramah that maybe you are allowed to have 10 women. In other words, there are different opinions out there, but that we could follow the opinion quite clearly that 10 women are permissible for a minyan for the sake of Megillah. And in source number 19, the Tzitz Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, says as follows, in my opinion, it is simple that we can read before them women when they are 10, and we don't need that there be 10 men, for women are also obligated in reading Megillah, and therefore, they are well able to combine to create 10 on their own and to read before them. For the intention of the Ramah and also the Magen Avraham is just regarding whether they can combine to create 10 together with men or whether they do not combine similar to Zeman. But everyone agrees that they can read and combine on their own. Therefore, halachically, the matter is clear and simple, that women can even l'chadchila from the outset gather for themselves 10 women in their home to hear Megillah reading and recite the brachot. Right? So, I'm trying to think if I want to tell the following story.
You want a coin?
What?
You want a coin?
No, I don't want a coin. I'm not going to tell a story, but if you want to know what the story is later, you ask me. Basically what we have over here is that if you want to have a secondary reading, so without going into the technicalities of, you know, are there some women who would appreciate having a women's reading and the like, without going into that for this moment, why would you need to have, naturally in any community, always you need to have a second reading at night and during the day, at least a second reading?
Because someone could have some other place they need to be, so they're...
readings. Okay, good. So very simple, right? So you need to have multiple readings because sometimes you have people who have someplace else they need to be. The simple situation that happens all the time is you have parents with little kids at home, and so they're not able to get a babysitter, right? Especially because everyone needs a babysitter on Purim night. If you're going to leave the little kids at home and you're not going to take the little kids with you, which, by the way, every single year, Rina and I always feel bad on Purim night when we're at Megillah reading, especially a year like this when it's so late, so we didn't bring our kids. We feel so guilty we see the other parents with their kids. And then about, 35 seconds into the Megillah reading, when all the kids start doing things they shouldn't be doing, so then we feel very good for not bringing our kids to Megillah reading. The moral of the story is if kids are too little to sit and pay attention, you probably should not bring them to Megillah reading. Certainly not one that you're hoping to fulfill your own obligation. But again, the point at the end of the day is that very typically parents with little kids, for sure, will need to split up at night and sometimes in the day as well to hear separate readings because they are not able to both leave their kids home alone without them. They need to have, and they don't have a babysitter. And so, of course, you need to have two separate readings. So what typically does happen in many situations is you will have the man go to the first reading. I'm not saying this is right or wrong. I'm just saying that this is what happens in a lot of circumstances. But the man will go to the first reading and the wife gets stuck at home putting the kids to bed or whatever. And then she'll go to the second reading. And so usually it's the mothers that need the second reading. And so a lot of times what people will do is even in the frummest of frum communities, they'll have a second reading for like women only. And it's specifically often you'll have a man doing the reading for 10 women. And so to get back to what we're saying now over here, so the Tzitz Eliezer is basically very clear that it's totally permissible, even lechachila, even from an ideal standpoint, to go ahead and have 10 women for a circumstance like that, because it's only a question of can they combine with men? Would you do 5 men and 5 women? But 10 women for the sake of their own minion is totally permissible, says the Tzitz Eliezer. Okay. With all of that at the foundation, now we really come to the final major point of the class, which is, can women read Megillah? Which we've essentially already answered that question. But really, mostly the perspective that we're going to try to understand is, what do we think about women's Megillah readings in general, right? So we all know this is something that happens even in Orthodox communities. This is not something that's very avant-garde anymore, although it was X amount of years ago. It's a very normal thing at this point. And so how do we get to what many shuls do nowadays, and that is have women's Megillah readings? And just full disclosure, for various reasons, it didn't work out. But I am tried very hard this past year, and I'd like to try hard for a future year to have a women's Megillah reading in the shul that hopefully will not be concurrent with the regular Megillah reading. But I believe very strongly that this is an important thing that shuls should be doing. And so how do we get there? So if you take a look in source number 20, so we have the Rush that tells us, for you should not say that even women discharge their obligation, only women need to hear a reading by men, right? So you have this perspective out there that says that women cannot read for themselves. Perhaps in an absolute, shas techak, you're in a backed into a corner, or maybe they could. But if you're setting out the ideal situation, which is what you do when you make a schedule for a shul, so that's the ideal version. So at the end of the day, women should not be reading for themselves. That's one perspective. The Ramah, on the other hand, when he codifies this for halacha, he says, and there are those who say that if a woman reads for herself, she recites the bracha to hear the Megillah. So we saw this source already, right? So clearly the Ramah was okay with women reading because he was quoting the opinion that says that some say they should say this bracha. So it's clearly understood and accepted that women can read the Megillah. So, says the Chaye Adam, so women, even though they are obligated, in any case, they do not have the obligation of reading, but the obligation of hearing, right? We've seen this already, that she is obligated to hear from a man, and she should not read even for herself, but rather a man should read before her. In any case, it seems to me that if she doesn't have someone to read before her, she should read for herself from a kosher Megillah, right? So totally everyone would agree that at the end of the day, if a woman has absolutely no other choice, for a woman, and she knows how to read the Megillah, for her to read by herself on a cloth in her apartment or her home, totally not just permissible, but she's obligated to do such a thing. Now, what if you have a man who is totally incapable of reading for whatever reasons, and he has a wife who is fully capable of reading? So can he fulfill his obligation through her? Okay, Anne says, why not? Serena says, yes. Okay, all right, we're all very, very liberal now. So, the Shulchan Aruch. What? We're all consistently liberal. So you take a look at the Shulchan Aruch, it's verse number 23. All are obligated in reading the Megillah, men and women, both the reader and the one who hears from the reader, discharge their obligation, and that is if he hears from one obligated in reading it. And there are those who say that women do not discharge men's obligation. Right? So this is a really important halacha that even when it comes to the importance of believing in the idea of women's Megillah readings, people should be wary of. Essentially, the question comes down to, so let's say you have the separate women's Megillah reading, which again is something that I think we should aspire to in our community and in other communities as well. So if you have the separate women's Megillah reading, should a man go to that Megillah reading? So that's a major question. And according to most poskim, that would be a very serious concern. Because again, certainly if there is no other option, there's only the possibility of hearing from a woman, is it permissible? And what to rely on? Absolutely, there's what to rely on. But when you're in terms of setting up your ideal version of what to do, a man should hear from another man because they absolutely have the same level obligation. Whereas when it comes to a woman, they don't necessarily have the same level obligation. So ideally, a man should not hear from a woman if that could be avoided. However, of course, when it comes to a woman hearing from another woman, it would seem like there is not much of an issue with that. Take a look at source number 24. Truly, for the Chaved Das, Rav Chacham Avadje Yosef, the former Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel, he says, truly we maintain as halacha, truly we maintain as halacha that even for reading the Megillah, women discharge men's obligation in accordance with the Rambam and Rashi in Eruchin, and so ruled our master the Shulchan Aruch without qualification, though he ended afterwards, and there are those who say that women don't discharge men's obligation, and the rule is known that an unqualified statement by, and there are those who say that the halacha is in accordance with the unqualified statement. Right? So at the end of the day, certainly, as we said, it should be avoided for a man to hear a woman laning, but if there's no other option, then theoretically it would be okay, just not something that one should rely on in an ideal circumstance. Further, the Marcheshet says in source number 25, there is a difference regarding this between the obligation of the day and the obligation of the night, right? So we asked the question before, is there a difference between the evening reading and the night reading? So now we're going to hear, yes, there is absolutely a difference. For in the day, its mitzvah is also because of remembering the obliteration of Amalek. But at night, the mitzvah of reading it is only because of publicizing the miracle. Therefore, at night, the obligation of men's and women's reading is equivalent. For with both of them, the mitzvah is only to publicize the miracle. Thus, at night, also according to the Bahag, women discharge men, for in this their obligation is equal. So this is an amazing statement and an important one, and that is to say that if you are going to have a women's Megillah reading, perhaps the best time to do it in a shul would be in the evening. The reason why is because there are those who say that even if they do have a, men and women have a separate level obligation, when it comes to the evening reading, the level obligation is more likely equivalent, and therefore, if you do have a man who decides to slip into the reading, or there are some men who feel very strongly, he should go to support the women's Megillah reading, whatever it might be. So at the end of the day, better to do it at night, because there's what to say that even then, that especially then, since they have an equivalent obligation, maybe it is okay. As opposed to what happens many times in shuls around the world, that you will have women reading during the morning or during the day at some point, and if a man comes to hear that, that is much more concerning in terms of following the black and white letter of the law.
So why not just have a woman read Megillah at night for everyone?
Okay, so fantastic question. Anyone want to answer that? Say it again.
Why not have a woman read Megillah at night for everyone if she discharges the men's and women's obligation?
In Minhag, it's tradition that the men do it.
Oh, don't say that, Joyce. You're killing me, Joyce.
Yes, tradition, but it's the umbrella factor.
Go on. What do you mean?
You're asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you.
The umbrella factor is we do what we've done.
You know, we can't argue.
No, guys, come on, come on. Stop being so cynical. Give me a more halachic answer.
There is no halachic reason for
not. No, there is a halachic reason. Okay.
But in the end, after all the controversy, you said we do it because we do it.
Okay, come on. That's not tonight, though. That's not tonight's answer. So to answer your question, Dave, is that at the end of the day, since we quoted one opinion over here that says that men and women have the same level of obligation at night, even if they don't have it during the day. But not everyone agrees with that, right? And so at the end of the day, that's the simple explanation.
What? Therefore, the minority wins.
Yeah. Who would minority win? You think this is all my shiurim are a synopsis of thousands of years of arguments.
Hours and hours of debate.
The majority of perspectives out there is certainly to say. I wouldn't even say the majority. There is a significant minority of people who do believe that there is a separate level obligation for men and women, even at night, and therefore that's what we try to rely on, or we try to follow that if we can, to the best of our abilities. Again, if there are circumstances beyond a person's control, let's say a person's in a town where there's only women's Megillah readings and no men are reading, of course they should go ahead and hear the Megillah. But when we're setting up a schedule in a shul, we try to follow as many opinions as possible. That's the general rule.
I have a question.
About yeah?
Kolisha, unless this is not considered.
Ah, Kolisha. Serena, that's the least of our concerns right now. Okay, so it's a fair question. So Serena asked about Kol Isha. Should we not be concerned about Kol Isha? So it's a fair point, and I appreciate the perspective. At the end of the day, when it comes to women reading Megillah, we're not necessarily going to be concerned about Kol Isha because it is a Torah matter. That's really what it comes down to. If they were going to belt out Shoshanas Yaakov after the reading of the Megillah, that's a little more problematic. But if they just want to read the Megillah, it seems like by and large we're not super concerned with that as an issue. But it's a good question.
Yeah, Marie. She's got a question in
chat. Oh yeah, what's the question? Okay, one second. Sam, can you clarify your question? Maybe not.
You need to unmute, Sam.
Sam? Paging Sam? Okay, if Sam, I would like to answer your question, but when you're ready, unmute and ask me the question more fully. Okay, so to begin to sum up. So okay, so what we've seen thus far, and it's clearest here in the Torah in source number 26. So the Bahag wrote, even though women are obligated in Megillah reading, they don't discharge men's obligation. Sorry to say it once again. And so at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, in terms of women's Megillah readings, so there is going to ultimately be this concern of if men are going to be listening. But if men are not listening, so then certainly there's what to say that there's no reason why you cannot have women doing their own separate reading. Now again, that does not mean that if a person wants to go ahead and check every single box, which we do try to check every single box to some people's dismay, and try to satisfy as many opinions as possible, typically, certainly in Orthodox Judaism, which is always fun. What that means is that since we'll say this part for Jim. Since what we always have done is we followed so many of the opinions that would enable us to come to the conclusion that we do have the man reading, and we have sort of these central reading times in the first reading of the evening on Purim night, and then in the first reading of the morning at Shacharis. Since that is the typically followed halacha, based on actual sources as to why we follow those halachot. So that is the absolute lichachila, black and white, best thing that a person should do. With that said, and you'll see in a moment why I am supportive of women's Megillah readings, with that said, the notion of having separate women's Megillah readings does come to be something that I think should be prioritized in our community. First, let's take a look at source number 27. Let's take a look at source number 28 first. Let's take a look at 27 first. So the Halicha Shlomo says, or Shlomo Zalman says in source number 27, that a woman should not discharge the obligation of the rabbim, of the public in Megillah reading, that is to discharge men's obligations. But it's fine for a woman to discharge other women's obligations. Good. So it's okay to have women's Megillah readings is essentially what you'll get from this over here. Now, the major concern that we do have is source number 28. Rav Yaakov Ariel, one of the contemporary rabbanim in Israel, says, Barov am hadras melech, that Megillah reading should be heard in the synagogue. One should not separate from the community, only in order for women to read the Megillah. Only in a second minyan of women caring for children can women also read. Right? So this is something that I personally feel very passionately about. And that is to say that what is not really an ideal situation is to have, you know, separate house minyanim doing separate readings and have rogue situations going on. That's not something that we try to have. The best possible scenario to have is to have a second later reading in the shul, not in the time of the regular one, that, as we know, naturally there will always be people who need that second reading, and to have that the time for a women's Megillah reading. But specifically, it should be done in the shul. It shouldn't be separate from the community. It should be part of the community. And anytime you do have this notion of being separate and, you know, not part of a shul, not part of the community, you run into this real concern. Forget about Megillah, but you run into the general overarching concern, the umbrella concern, as Jim would say, of being poresh min hatzibur, of separating yourself from the congregation. And to do that is really, really not an ideal. Again, are there times throughout Jewish history when you needed to have a group who decides to be poresh for specific and important reasons? Absolutely. But the more you can do to bring the community together under one roof, even in separate rooms, as it might be sometimes, it's critical to go ahead and do that. And so the only real concern that a person might have with women's Megillah reading is to have a simultaneous reading from the main minyan doing the reading and to do the reading outside of the shul. But as long as it's in the shul, and as long as it's not conflicting with the larger one and taking away from the larger minyan, not allowed, but it's actually preferable to go ahead and do something like that. And we'll conclude with source number 29. Source number 29 is a piece from Rav Moshe Lichtenstein. And he wrote as follows. I think he sent this out in an email or something like that. He says, if a woman's Megillah leaning is done under the auspices of the shul, it forms part of the communal unity along the lines of orchestral harmony, which is achieved by different instruments contributing to an overall harmony rather than having a single instrument create a monovocal harmony. Thus, if we view it as part of a communal framework, all that is left is indeed Berov Am. Right, that this notion of having as many people as possible. And I don't think that it should necessarily be the overriding factor in this case. Allowing the group to express itself lifnei Hashem, before God, in a manner that is halachically appropriate is the right thing to do for their avodat Hashem. These women sincerely desire to be ovdot Hashem, and they should be allowed the channels to do so. Kain benot Slovchad dovrot, the daughters of Slovchad speak right. There are so many avenues of worship that are accorded off to sincere halachic women. It is therefore crucial to allow those that can be allowed. I assume that circumstances such as these surely qualify for what Chazal had in mind when they spoke about la sot nachat ruach lanashim, that you should do things in a way to make as many people happy. And with that, well, I'll just stop the share for a second. And when it comes down to it, having women's Megillah readings are important for one primary reason and one primary reason only, and that is that it makes more people feel included, certainly in an element, in an area of Judaism, in a sect of Judaism that sometimes does make women feel pushed to the side. And so if we can create an opportunity to include women, not just in a halachically okay way, but lichachila, even in an ideal form, for many, it's certainly appropriate to go ahead and do so. So perhaps it's good that we did this after Purim this year, because this Purim, it wasn't going to happen. We weren't going to be able to get a women's Megillah reading, but you now have 365 days. Anyone want to help organize a women's Megillah reading here next year? Sounds like Shira's volunteering. If anyone's interested, please let me know. With that, we wish everyone a beautiful evening and happy to take any questions.